on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
I remember about 10 years ago, there was this whole fight about meditation and New Age and anything like chakras and anything that was considered like, you know, New Age spirituality. It was all crap, and it isn't. You know, I actually follow all of that, and I'm a Reiki master teacher, and it's just a different tradition. The things that they teach you is to meditate and turn off the noise, you know. And when you do that, and you go outside, or you light your altar, or you, I don't know, look at the stars or whatever, and just allow the energy to come to you, you will learn a lot of things.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather. And in this episode, I am joined by author Chris Allen to discuss his book, The Black Book of Jonathan Knotbristle, A Devil's Parable and Guide for Witches. Chris discusses the value of teaching through story, learning by listening to nature, merging ecstatic and traditional folkloric witchcraft, the power of imagination, and Mother Goose is a book of magical spells. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Chris Allen has been studying witchcraft, magic, and paganism since 1992. He is one of the founders of an ordained minister with the Fellowship of the Phoenix. He has been an initiate of traditional witchcraft since 2002. He also has permission to carry the Lakota Sacred Pipe and walks the path of the Red Road. He teaches classes and workshops on magic, healing, shamanism, and necromancy. He has been teaching and writing for many years. He is the author of A Guide to Spirits, Underworld, Shamanism, Myth, and Magic, Deeper into the Underworld, Death, Ancestors, and Magical Rites, and Upper World, Shamanism, and Magic of the Celestial Realms. He continues to study and teach the magical arts to those who seek to balance the three worlds in their own lives. He joins me today to discuss his most recent publication, The Black Book of Jonathan Knotbristle, A Devil's Parable and a Guide for Witches. Chris, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. As I told you before I hit record, I just finished reading The Black Book of Jonathan Knotbristle last evening. I enjoyed it very much. I don't read a lot of fiction these days.
Who said it was fiction?
That was actually going to be one of the questions I had for you. I was going to say, but it's not really fiction, is it?
No, it's weird because, and there's a story about how all this came to be, but actually I can tell the story actually.
Yeah, please.
So I am actually very good friends with the Malloway brothers, and they opened up a publishing company, and they're like, oh, Chris, you got to write something for us. And I said, no way. I'm in grad school for my master's in divinity. And I said, I don't have the time, because, you know, when you write something like this, you have to, you know, research and practice and research and write. And it takes about a year or two. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't have that, time, you know, because of school. And, you know, so the boys are kind of persistent, and I love them. And they were like, oh, no, you have to. I'm like, no. I'm like, you have to. I'm like, okay, I have an idea. I had this idea. So my idea is that I've worked a lot with the witch ancestors and witch spirit. And if you've read my previous books, you see that all the time. And Jonathan, and that isn't his right name, I actually changed it. One of the spirits I work with, we had this idea together to write a magical manual kind of based on this witch ancestors' techniques. I mean, granted, use some poetic license to enhance the storytelling and things like that. But this is a spirit that I want to say, I don't want to say channeled, I'm going to say inspired. And the reason I'm not saying channeled is, and when I sat down to the computer, I would conjure him, say the invocations and things like that. But a lot of people like, oh, well, you say channel, but you really mean UPG and you made it up. I'm like, yes, all those things all at the same time because we are witches, you know? So, this is Jonathan's story. Some of it is verbatim, some of it is poetic license, you know, kind of like, you know, how I think of it. If you know anything about Little House on the Prairie, it's actually based on real people, but some of the stories in the show were actually kind of told to kind of enhance the storytelling. So I think I use both of those things. And you know, I taught in my own magical practice, mythology is a real thing. So some of it is mythology, some of it is, you know, actual practical and all of the above. So that's how the book came to be. And I am going to brag just a little bit because now there's other people who are using storytelling to teach magical practice. And I'm glad because I think the art of storytelling and with magical practice has been kind of forgotten. And so I'm glad we're bringing that back. And I'm glad I can kind of be at the forefront of that, you know.
Okay. Yeah, it was interesting in the sense that I definitely saw connections to a lot of folklore. And I want to ask you about that. But also, I appreciated the fact that while reading it, even before I got to the back of the book where there is a list of the spells, I'm like, I bet some of these spells might work. Or some of the techniques.
All of them are going to
Yeah.
work,
You
absolutely.
know, or some of the techniques, right? And I thought that I went back to the title that it was a parable, that it was teaching something. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, my magical teachers, and because I work a lot with Lakota spirituality, and one of my teachers is a Billy Topatate, who's an Apache, and Native American spirituality, they teach through storytelling. They don't just say, do it this way or do it this. It's taught through a story. I mean, granted, there is take this and take that and do it this way, but you have to know why you're doing something. How my brain works. Like, I'm one of those people, if I can wrap my head around how something works, like math, science, plumbing, I mean, whatever. As long as I can figure out how and why it works, I can do it. And that's how I've been through everything, especially magical practice. I would sit there and think, okay, what's the mechanics of it? How does it feel? Why does it work? What happens? And when you tell a story of the why, I think it really hits home about how you call the spirits, how you do a love spell, how you do a curse, and so forth, you know.
Yeah. And one of the things I wanted to add to what I was saying is that it seems, and please correct me if this is not correct, but it seems as if presenting these via story allows the practitioner to kind of modify a little bit to their own practice.
Sure. Yeah, I think you should. So my very first spell, when I was like 17 years old, I read the spell out of a book and I thought, no. I'm gonna change this and change this. I don't know why I thought I could do that. I just did. But I modified it. I mean, I didn't ch change it all together. I just, you know, you
Oh,
switch this, you switch that. And so I encourage it. I encourage people, as long as you understand the core technique, like for example, if you're conjuring something, when I mean conjuring, I mean you're calling something forth into the astral slash physical realm, you have to connect to it. You have to feel it. And how you get there is up to you. So for me, I do a lot of breathing, energy work, visualization. I dance, I move. For some people, maybe it's singing, maybe it's playing an instrument, maybe it's spinning in a circle. Whatever gets you there, do that. So I encourage change the spell, whatever you want, it's yours.
No, I liked it a lot, and I appreciated that what Jonathan was doing, and I imagine this goes over into actual practices, going into trance. And I see the shamanic element there as well, and what you were just saying, that it can be a variety of techniques.
Yeah, and I've been having some just discussions with people. There's this whole thing about now about because I write about traditional craft and shamanism and things like that, but I've noticed now in witchcraft there's a separation between ecstatic witchcraft, which is traditional, and folkloric witchcraft. And folkloric, so folkloric witchcraft is like get the cow's tongue, take a nail, hammer it, and hide it under someone's doorstep, or take the poppet and stab it with the pens. Ecstatic witchcraft is more of you go into a trance, you connect to the spirits, and you call them that way. And both are part of the traditional craft. But it's interesting because I wrote a book in 2020 called Other World, and 90% of it is ecstatic trance work because I was taught by my teachers that a witch should be able to walk into a forest with no tools, candles, wands, at the mace, cauldrons, anything, and be able to do powerful spells. And you do that through ecstatic work and movement. And what a lot of people don't realize is a lot of witch craft in Northern European was ecstatic. You got your Sather craft and you have shaking and swaying and things like that, conjuring up storms. But anyway, I had I'm gonna say a lot, some criticism of the book because it didn't teach folkloric. I'm like, I'm literally teaching you how to go into a trance, open up a portal into the world of the fairies, and have a genuine experience versus leave out an offering, which you should leave offerings. But I'm one of those people who I want the tangible experience. I want to be touched by the spirits. I just don't want to visualize them. I want to have, like, I want to hold them and grasp them and see manifestations and have them actually do spells versus just a visualization, So, a lot of the book and Jonathan is about going into trance, and there's a lot of folklore too. I'm hoping I put the two together in a way that kind of meets the whole. Well, I guess kind of my purpose is kind of like, here's something for the folklore people, here's something for the ecstatic people, and if you put it together, and to be honest, that's how I was taught traditional craft. And then that's how Jonathan would teach it because, I know this is going to sound strange to some people. In my circle, my coven, I don't have a pre-planned spell. I say, okay, ancestors, teach us. What are we doing? Teach us how to do it. And they do. But Jonathan, I just happen to write it down.
Yeah. No, I think it came across very clearly that it was a combination, because I started by mentioning some of the folklore, but then also went into the trance aspect. No, I definitely saw that. And I wanted to ask, in regards to the folklore for a moment, the book is set in the mid to late 19th century, so in the 1800s,
1870.
right? And it's in the South. Do you actually locate it anywhere?
So I don't actually say it in the book, but it is in Texas.
Okay.
And I grew up in Texas. And, one of the things that I've talked to people from the South, from other as states, and there's some similarities about where, you have these people who would never call themselves witches or anything like that, but they were psychic or had dreams or could manifest.
Right.
And if they didn't call it that, they would say, I'm making a wish. I'm talking to Jesus. And they were Christian. They were hardcore Christian, but they believe, in ghosts and fairies and in gods and demons. And they don't really call them gods per se. More strong spirits and things. Like I can remember some of the old folks saying, don't be in those woods after dark. The spirits are coming get you. And they weren't saying this. Like they honestly believe that. And that's just how they are in the country. And I think there's a certain type of understanding about true country folk. I don't mean people who move into the country. I'm saying born and raised, your family was raised, it's generational. There's a respect for the spirits that they don't understand. It just is. And when I talk to people about conjure and hoodoo, same thing. Like they never call themselves a witches, they were Christians.
Right.
Other people call them witches all the time. And so it was just part of it. Like how I grew up, the woods behind my house, they used to, some of the farmers, because I grew up in farm country, they didn't have the resources or the time. If a horse or a cow died, they didn't bury it. They actually hauled it off and dumped it in the woods. And so these woods would have tons of skulls and bones and decaying flesh and flies and death, and to us that was normal. It was normal. And but let me tell you, those spirits manifest, especially at night. Like as soon as the sun set, you hauled ass out of this woods because you could feel it, you could hear it. You hear people saying, I was chased by something, but you never saw it. That's the country. And there's this whole understanding about they don't call it witchcraft, they just call it working with spirits, or it's my dreams, or Jesus told me this thing, which always happened to come true. So that's part of the mystique of Jonathan, is that it kind of captures that idea of the spirits are here, you just have to listen.
Yeah. Well, I particularly like that how he learned a lot of how he learned. I mean, yes, he did have help from spirits and other figures I want to talk about. But I think at one point, let me see if I can find the quote here. It's one of the best ways to learn magic was to shut up and just listen to the land.
I just said
Yep.
it. Yeah, it's interesting because as a kid, when I grew up, I could always feel it—the spirits and the monsters under the bed and things like that. I just felt it all the time. And when you were outside at night and in the country, I mean, the house, I on my old street where I grew up, they have street lights, but they in the 80s they didn't. And so it's dark and you could just feel it and you could just listen, especially when I became a teenager and I got into witchcraft and things. They teach you things, they tell you things, and you could say you're making it up, or you can say it's intuitive, whatever, but they talk to you. And the things I tell my students all the time, there's a misunderstanding of psychic communications. It isn't always, I hear your thoughts. It isn't always, it can, but it isn't always that. Sometimes it's a, I have this feeling and I'm interpreting this feeling in this way, or I had this dream, or I don't know how I, my mother, hand to God, would say things like, I don't know how I know, I just know this. And it always came true. Oh, like always. And she, and to this day, she goes, I don't know how I know, I just know. You know, because you just have to l listen. And I think, you know, I remember about 10 years ago, there was this whole fight about meditation and New Age and anything like chakras and anything that was considered like, you know, New Age spirituality. It was all crap, and it isn't. You know, I actually follow all of that, and I'm a Reiki master teacher, and I, it's just a different tradition. The things that they teach you is to meditate and turn off the noise, you know. And when you do that, and you go outside, or you light your altar, or you, I don't know, look at the stars or whatever, and just allow the energy to come to you, you will learn a lot of things, you know. I mean, sometimes I'm like, oh, I think I learned something, but I'm not sure what happened. And then a few days it goes, oh, I learned this, you know. So yeah, listen to the land, the earth, the stars, animals. Oh my God. And Lakota spirituality, the things they teach you is connect with the animals, connect with the trees, connect with the sky, connect. You always connect. And you know, and that's how you observe and watch and learn. They say you're, you know, you're animal teachers, and they are teachers. Like, and I don't mean, oh, learn something from them. No, they are like a mentor, you know. Watch them. They're trying to teach you something.
No, I'll mention this very, very briefly. I've mentioned this several times on the podcast, but I went through this probably 12-year, I call it an experiment. I had lived in Southern California. I was in Pasadena, and I was pretty close to a canyon. And so I hiked this canyon, and it was very important to me to hike the same trail every week. So weather permitting, I was there every week for 12 years. And part of that was I wanted to get to know a place, but I also wanted to see what it could teach me. And started to learn to listen and to, and it's very difficult for me to describe it or explain it, but it changed me in some pretty profound ways. And I found things that, you know, I used to be horrified of snakes, but rattlesnake became a very important teacher to me.
Yes,
No.
spirit teachers, spirit helpers, things like that. Like, just watch. And it's also watch the bugs, watch the bees, watch the cicadas, watch the birds as they fly by. Watch, you know, one of the things I try to listen to, and this is an old witchcraft thing I was taught years ago, the trees talk to you. Look at the leaves, connect, open your heart. I'm just going to say it. Open your heart chakra. Send your heart chakra energy to the tree. Connect to its center and watch the branches. And use your intuition and try to, A, feel what's the intention there? What are they trying to tell you? And then imagine if it was talking to you. Just imagine, what's that like? And imagine the tree could speak. What is it saying right now? You know, you have to do it on, well, three or four levels. Observe, connect energetically, feel it, like feel it emotionally. And then imagine, you know, a lot of people say, it's how do you know witchcraft is not your imagination? I'm like, witchcraft is 100% your imagination. However, it's not fantasy. It's a vehicle for communication, just like your voice is a vehicle, your ears are a vehicle. You know, you hear as a tool. Your imagination because what does your imagination do? It shapes the astral. So what you're doing is you're allowing your imagination to take these astral energies and shape it in a way that's meaningful for you.
Yeah, we love to downplay the imagination and
Well,
disregard
I
it.
think we're scared of it. I think we're
Yeah.
scared of lying to ourselves that it's fake. And at the end of the day, hey, whatever it is, all it is fake. I tell my students, so did your spell work? Yeah. Who cares?
Right.
You know, because if you think about it, 300 years ago or 200 years ago, do you think witches stood around thinking, I wonder if it's all in my head? No. Did the spell work? Yes. I don't care how it worked. I
Right.
don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the mechanics and I teach the technique, but yeah, it worked.
Yeah.
It's on you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something from the 21st century and 20th century, I think, that we just discount imagination. I wanted to go back to the book a little bit in terms of the devil. And who is this fellow in the book?
Well, the devil or the idea of a devil actually shows up several times in the book. One of the things I learned when I was learning traditional witchcraft is they often call this horned god or this horned spirit the devil. And so I asked my teacher, because I was always taught, you know, from all the Llewellyn 101 magic books that there is no devil in the craft. And I was fine with that because I believe in the gods and things like that. And I asked him, I said, why do all these teachings talk about the devil? And he said to me, well, first of all, it's about interpretation. It isn't Satan, first of all. For us, it's a very colorful way to say fuck you to Christianity and say our horned one's the devil. You keep saying we worship the devil. So you know what? Guess what? We are boo. You know. However, I mean, that's just our fun way of explaining it. But the actual way is imagine you're in the 1600s and your local parish talks to you about the devil. And the devil, the preacher says, appears to you with the cloven hoof horns and he wants you to sign the black book and he teaches you witchcraft. That's the devil. And then one night, a horned figure comes to you. And you're like, oh, a preacher said that was the devil, so it must be the devil. And who is it actually? The horned god, the witch father, the witch master, things like that. One of the things that, you know, and especially in Jonathan, I wanted to be true to that idea of Jonathan's a Christian. He was taught Christianity. So to him, he didn't have a teacher saying, oh, that's not the devil, that's the horned god. To him, that's what the devil is, you know. But in a practical sense, about Hawaiian traditional craft, we say the devil is A, because we're trying to connect to that old world folklore aspect about the horned god. But at the same time, for me and for a lot of my own circle, where we allow ourselves to go deeper in our witchcraft and our magic is when we feel witchy, when we feel that, oh, Halloween, creepy spider, cauldron, skull, get your hands in the graveyard dirt and just call up some shit. So when you use that imagery of the devil, it does that. It just creates this like imagery. At the same time, we know it's not Satan.
Right.
It's the horned figure. You know? Yeah. So I'm actually asked that question a lot. And, you know, one of my dear friends, Laura Gonzalez, who actually hosts my show with Mickey, the Mystic Chat, she was like, before you explain that, I hated when people said, "Oh, the devil." She goes, "Now I like it. It's fun." I'm like, "That's the point. That's the whole point, you know."
Yeah, because a lot of people, yeah, everything you say, yeah, I enjoy that. And I think a lot of people don't understand that the devil, the imagery was they stole it from the Greek god Pan, and it was just symbolic of nature and wildness and frolicking and things like that. But I love some of the things that you wrote about the devil, the horned one here. I'm going to quote again. Talks about his many other names as a great spirit or god, if you will, who teaches us to go against what common folk be telling you. He teaches you how to face your own darkness so you can kindle your own light. He teaches that what we got to face the consequences of our actions. Only then can we grow spiritually. He tests us, he tricks us, he pushes us to the ground so we can learn to pick our own selves up without needing no one else to do it. And I really liked that.
Well, one of the things, if you so you have to remember, I have a degree in divinity, and what they teach you and the Hebrew Bible, Satan didn't show up until Christianity. It didn't
Well,
happen.
he was actually there. He was in the Hebrew Bible three times.
He's not actually.
Well,
He's
Satan
the
is.
adversary.
Yeah. Yeah,
So
well,
you
the
have
Hebrew
to.
name, the Hebrew term is the Satan.
Right, which translates in Hebrew
The
as
adversary.
the adversary, but the character of Satan, the character, didn't show up until the New Testament. That being said, Ha-Satan was actually an angel sent by God. So how people don't understand, if you've ever really studied the Bible, the Bible talks about angels have a very specific purpose, like they do this. And when you study a ceremonial angelic magic, that's why you call certain angels to do certain things, right? So think of Ha-Satan, or the adversary, as God's enforcer. So that, for example, if you're an asshole and you're killing people and hurting people and stealing and raping, he sends the angel, one of his other angels, Samael. And the idea is that he says, "Hey, listen, this asshole over here is hurting people. Here's all the ways." And of course, he's a frightening figure. If you know anything about Hebrew Gnosticism and like the esoteric biblical teachings, they think of the same angel as someone who specifically causes really bad circumstances and darkness so that you're forced to find your own inner strength. That's not in the Hebrew Bible at all. However, if you're doing esoteric work, shamanic work, that's the idea. If you study Luciferian stuff, it kind of talks about that, how he teaches you how to have your own inner light. So in traditional craft, they take a lot of Hebrew influences. Like one of our names, the Horned One, is Tubal-Cain, who is the son of Cain and Abel. He's the first blacksmith. So his idea is that there's all these biblical character who they kind of elevate as gods or whatever, and they're not like, "Well, let's hurt you." It's more of a, "Let's put you in a situation that causes you to really reflect, look, and I don't want to say suffer, but it depends on how you look at it. Like, for example, you lose your job. Is that an opportunity or is that suffering? It could be suffering if you can't pay your rent, but it also could be opportunity if you can't, if you hate your job, and this God comes and takes it away from you. It hurts, sucks, but he created opportunity so that you can find growth. So all these ideas about that's what the devil does. He's your protector, but he's also the one who says, okay, get out of the house because you need to grow. If you stay in the house and I just protect you, you're not going to find your own strength. Now, you may think I'm cruel, and maybe I am cruel, but I'm doing it so that you can find your own inner life strength. So in traditional craft, we see him as the horned one, the witch father. But for us, the witch father isn't about taking care of us. He's about teaching us.
Right.
And I teach my students, look at things as opportunities. Feel your pain and feel the suffering, like, oh, this sucks. I hate it. I hate it. It sucks. It hurts. Now, after we move through that pain, what's the opportunity? What's the lesson? You know, and when people say pagan gods don't teach lessons, I'm gonna call bullshit. Yes, they do. All the time. All the time. Look at the Greek myths. Lesson, 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 lesson. All the time. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know people who would say that. If they do, they're horribly ill-informed. In the book, I don't know if she is seen as like an equal. It's the you have the devil, but then you have Holda. And I didn't know much about Holda, so I looked her up a little bit, and there's a background for her. And I was wondering if you could maybe say a little bit about who Holda was
So Frau Holda
or who she is. Excuse me.
and the word Frau just means like lady of respect, stuff like that. So in my tradition, it's very Germanic and Christian at the same time. Or I should say Christian has Christian influences. And for Holda, if you look at the Norse mythologies, she's the goddess of winter. If you look at folkloric witchcraft, which is different than some of the myths, she's kind of a combination between the goddess of winter, but also Hela, the goddess of death, like her half face of beauty and death and decay. We call her the goddess who's most foul and fair
Right.
for many reasons. One of the reasons is because half her face is beautiful, the other half is very foul and disgusting and decaying. She's the goddess of the in-between. She holds the gates between the world of fairy and the world of the dead. Some say that she's a goddess of the dead. In my craft, she's one of the goddesses of fairy. In folk craft, or the craft that I was taught, there's not really so much an upper world, underworld, midworld. It's the physical and then the other world. She stands at the gate, but she stirs a cauldron of souls. But in spring, she also opens the gates and lets all the fairies frolic. You know, one of the things you have to understand about gods and folklore, they like to blend them all together. So it's like half of this and half of that. It's kind of like in tradecraft, the for the horned one is like a Pan figure or a Carnunnos figure, but he's also the blacksmith. He's also the challenger, but he's also the father in the protector sense, like all these different things. And you know, I would ask my teachers about why is that? Why can't they get their shit together? Why didn't they know the myths? And how it was taught to me was is that a lot of these people were illiterate, didn't have mythology books. I mean, you know, and so they learned from their parents or their community, or their grandparents. And some of that translation got lost. It's like a game of telephone. By the time we got to you, the story changed, and some of the gods were probably forgotten. And so they kind of like, well, I know there's a goddess of death, and I know for a whole, always the same one. And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't think it matters. It's for me, is that connection. How does that goddess manifest for you? I have people who only see her as a goddess of death. I have people who only see her as a goddess of fairies. So I think that's fine. I'm when it comes to your own experience, as your experience, I think UPG is very important, but I don't think that UPG is the law for everyone, because I truly believe is that how you experience all energy. So if it's a chakra or the gods, the universe or a planet or whatever, it has to go through your lens. So who you are, so your hopes, your dreams, your biases, the things you like, the things you dislike. It all has to go through all that before you have a connection with it. So how I think God is what can be, let's just say, God is a life, and how someone else experiences her as a goddess of death, I think that's completely fine. And both are valid,
Right. Yeah. And she can be both at the same time, right?
Absolutely. And
Yeah.
how I experience her, that she is both at the same time, 100%.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I'm a sci-fi geek. I love all things sci-fi, but I'm also a pagan priest. I don't talk about both at the exact same time. On certain times, I talk about Star Trek. Certain times, I talk about the goddess. And both are true,
Yeah. Well, and it is, I think, ongoing in terms of world religions that as they evolve and change, that there's a merging and blending of gods and goddesses sometimes,
Yes,
from small,
absolutely.
that, oh, well, this is our village goddess, but it's an awful lot like, Kali. So we'll just say it's
That's right.
Kali, right? And I think that when people are severed from the traditions, and I think you were mentioning this, and this is something that comes up with the folklore a bit, is there is a certain amount of having to reinterpret and reinvent in some ways, isn't
Oh,
there?
yeah, we're doing that right now in witchcraft.
Right.
We're reinterpreting, reinventing. We are becoming, I hope, inspired by other cultures and not appropriating, which that's a whole other topic I have s strong opinions about. But, because I think you can take, for example, you can take Lakota spirituality and you can become inspired by what they do without actually taking their teachings and their ceremonies. I mean, granted, there are some universal truths. We know the sky is up and then the earth is down. Well, we know this. We also know we have a heart, lungs, and a kidney. So, it's okay to say, oh, in several cultures, we experience the earth as a female goddess. I think that's okay. That is an appropriation. It becomes appropriation when we say, if we're going to take your sweat lodge and say it's witchcraft. It's not, But anyway, we can, for becoming inspired by other religions, other cultures, and I'm hoping that if we are doing it in a way that's, ethical, that's empowering, and actually, also for connecting with others through like interfaith things. So instead of saying, oh, I'm inspired by, let's just say, Hinduism, but I'm gonna avoid you. So let's all get together and have a conversation and connect and help each other out.
Yeah.
That's my hope.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've done that a lot in history, you know, that there's always been sharing and cross communication. You know, the appropriation is the theft and the not acknowledging, I think. So some of the folklore that appeared in the book, I was a little bit familiar with. For example, I think the Wild Hunt shows up at one point. And at another point, I wanted to listen to the old Charlie Daniels song about the devil and playing his fiddle, because I think that's an old folklore. But the one that was really interesting to me was, I'm going to call, I don't know if it would be Book of Shadows or a grimoire, but Mother Goose. Yeah.
So that's one of my favorite things. I remember as a child thinking, what is wrong with Mother Goose stories? Everybody dies. Jack died in Jack in Jill. I mean, and there's like spiders that attack people, and babies that are thrown out the window. Like, what the hell? And my teacher explained to me that, well, you know what? It's actually a book of spells. And Jonathan actually teaches you how to use some of them. And when you have this idea that it rhymes with Mother Goose or spells, there's love spells, protection spells, there's curses, there's healing spells, there's all types of things. All types of things. Like, for example, Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Well, where do you? Okay, the hill, especially in folklore magic, what's the hill? A fairy mound or the mound of the dead to fetch a pail of water. Well, how would you do that? A well. Who lives in the well? Froholda lives in the well, or Breege, or the fairies, or whatever. Jack fell down and broke his crown. He died. He's dead. If you break your head, you're dead. And Jill came tumbling after. He broke. So, A, you can interpret that as a sacrifice. You can also interpret it as he's going to live in the with the fairies now, and Jill came tumbling after. How would you interpret that? There's several ways. How I'm interpreting is that, she called to him the spirit realm. Or maybe she tumbled, she fell over. And so maybe that was an ecstatic practice to call the dead. Now, how would I use that to spell? What was it for? Spirit conjuration. I'd also use that spell for, well, I guess you could use it as a curse. I mean, I wouldn't, but you could, I guess. Maybe you could use it as a portal to the other world and call the spirits. Or maybe you could call the spirit of Jack and Jill and see what they can teach you about the rhyme. There's all kinds of possibilities. Once you know the basic witch lore about hills and wells and horned people and fairies and whatever, you can kind of figure it out. Another curse, Humpty Dumpty. They could not put Humpty Dumpty back together again. But yeah, I actually have my another ghost over here on the shelf over here. I like it. It's fun. It's itchy, and there's something about connecting to your childhood that brings back that magic. I think that witchcraft, when you can find play and fun at the same time to something strange, that's witchcraft.
I think that a lot of kids probably engage in witchcraft without knowing it.
Well, ring around the
Rosies,
rosy.
eh? Yeah.
And well, what that's actually out is about the plague.
Right.
So it sounds pretty, right? Ring around the rosies. Oh, I have a pocket full of posies. Well, no, when you died, you stank, and they would fill you up with flowers.
Right.
I kind of love the duality of that rhyme.
Well, I'm really interested in how in the folklore and the myth, and even in, childish rhymes from like Mother Goose, that they, if you just scratch the surface, there's a tradition under there that has been mostly forgotten.
Well, yeah. I have a theory, and it's just my own personal theory, is that I think these spirits and these practices are waking up again. I think that the more that we're doing the magic and doing the workings and things, that the spirits are they're paying attention to us, and they're saying, "Oh, okay, since you're doing that, let me teach you something." And I think they're teaching us through intuition, inspiration, through dreams, through songs, through film. I can't tell you how many times I've been inspired by a film or a movie I've seen. Like I said before, they're always speaking with us. We just have to listen in our own way.
Let me ask, do you have any idea or theory as to why they may be waking up now or reaching out to us now?
I think that a lot of us are going deeper. I think so. I teach my students that the more powerful you become, the stronger spirits and gods pay attention to you. It's kind of like if you're an executive, you're not going to pay attention so much into the girl behind the cash register. You're not. If you're an executive in a huge company, so when all of a sudden you or a salesperson, and you sold $1 million, I'm gonna pay attention to you. You got my attention now. Same thing when you become more powerful, more connected, more, I hate to say elevated, but your spirituality is growing. You're going deeper in the magic. You're making spirit contact. Stop. Got my cat over here. He's hissing at the other one. When you're summoning the dead, dragons, fairies, all of a sudden the other spirits are going, "Oh, well, if you're doing that, let's talk." And maybe it's a world soul type of deal to where people are evolving, and so the world soul by default is also evolving. I don't know, but I think that the deeper we go as spiritual people, as pagans, as witches, or whatever, some more things are starting to shift and wake up. Along with that, I have found that the stronger resistance we get from evangelicals and some Christian groups, like classic witchcraft, but the light comes the dark, and it's funny how we're not the dark, they are the oppressors.
We're in a really interesting time, especially in the United States, where there is this kind of transformation of religion. People are leaving the traditional churches kind of in droves. And the I think the most the fastest growing demographic are the people who identify as spiritual but not religious.
Yeah,
But part of
agreed.
that is people are also wanting to reconnect with nature. And I think once you start doing that, it opens up the doors to paganism in many ways.
I hope so. I really do, because in my seminary, and I'm a chaplain, and I have people ask me all the time, "Can you recommend and make some books on just paganism?" There aren't a lot. Right? So there's one of my favorite authors, John Beckett, wrote some books about paganism, and I like him a lot. I like him tremendously. I got to spend some time with him at the Austin Witch Fest in 2022, and he's awesome. But other than him, there's a few, but I wouldn't say anything that's really academic, things that I would take to a university. The catch 22 of that is people saying, "Oh, you don't need to be academic." I'm like, you gotta learn to speak to certain people in a certain way. That's just the truth of it. And I do think we all have a voice. I think we all have an important voice. But how we choose to use that voice, there are some people who are not going to hear us if we don't speak in a certain way,
Right.
you know.
Right.
And that's just the truth of it. And, you know, I don't think you need to be an academic, but I do think you need to learn to speak and teach and write in a certain way,
Right.
you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an ongoing question for me that I've been thinking a lot about. I know that we're pretty much at the end, but I think about the question of what is paganism quite a bit. You know, and I come from an academic background, so that's where that's always there.
Well, for me, paganism is, you know, honoring the land, but also honoring the stars and the heavens and things, whatever that means. Because the heavens is in the nature too. I think it's also honoring the ancestors and honoring the plant and tree spirits and all those things. I think it's honoring the cycles of life and death and rebirth. I'd like to honor those cycles with it, like, you know, the Sabbaths and the full moons and things. And it's really honoring the environment, you know. It's interesting because, you know, one of the things that we are taught and in the code of spirituality is you never call indigenous people pagan, ever. It's considered an insult. The reason is because they weren't allowed to practice their own tradition because paganism and evil were considered the same. And so they've really tried to talk about how they are unique spirituality. The interesting thing about that is that I actually think that paganism, how we honor it today, is not the paganism of 2000 years ago. It was a different thing. And I think it's okay to have indigenous spirituality and paganism as two different things. Because I know a lot of people try to lump them together, or even Hinduism. They try to say, oh, Hinduism is a form of paganism. I'm like, no, it's not. It's a polytheistic,
Right.
but it's not how we honor how pagans today worship, I guess you. I hate to say, well, worship, but just connect to spirit, I guess. So, yeah, I think that in the next few years are going to be very interesting about what paganism is. I don't think we need to be reconstructionalists anymore. I used to think we should be. I don't think that anymore. I think that we should learn our past, but evolve in the future.
Right.
You know, I don't think we have to, you know, all live on a farm and go to the well and cook outdoors. I don't think we need to do that. I do think we need to take these ancient teachings and learn to evolve them in an organic way that's healthy though and sustainable and things like that. You know, I don't need to sacrifice chicken. However, I eat chickens. And I honor groups that do, like in voodoo, that do sacrifice the chicken. I honor that because here's this little guy who's been trying to attack my hand. Isn't he cute?
Yeah, what's his name?
Oliver, as an
Oliver.
Oliver Twist.
Okay.
But anyway, I think that I hope that we stop attacking me, evolve in a very, again, organic way that's a true. To who we are in the 21st century, but at the same time, honor traditional teachings.
All right. Well, I know that we are at the end of our hour. So let me ask you the final two questions. One is, what do you have coming up?
I actually have a brand new book coming out. I'm holding him because he's just attacking my feet.
Yeah.
I have a hardcover edition of my brand new book for coming out. It's called Whispers from the Coven, and it is about it's the same what kind of idea of storytelling of Jonathan Entwistle, but it takes place in 1947 Chicago, and it's the magical journey of a coven of witches who take turns telling their story. Each of them have a chapter.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I'm excited about that. The hardcover comes out in April. The soft cover doesn't come out till October this year.
Okay. All right. Well, I will look forward to reading that, and I definitely want to read some of your previous books. I was hoping to read Underworld before I spoke with you. I just didn't have the opportunity
So
that.
I would highly recommend getting the hardcover edition. That's the reason. It's Underworld and deeper into the Underworld
Oh.
in the same edition, and it's hardcover, and you're actually saving money. It's more expensive to buy two soft
Right.
covers than it is to buy one hardcover special edition.
Okay.
So that's my plug on that book too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for the information. Where can people go to find out more about you and your work and keep up with all the books you write?
I have a website. It's chrisallen.com. So
Okay.
chrisallan.com. And you can find me on Instagram, Facebook. I have a Twitter account or whatever it's called now.
Yeah,
I don't
X.
ever use it. It's kind of,
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't like it. But I'm on Instagram, Facebook, all those things.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Chris, thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed speaking with you. There were a lot of other things that
I
I
know, I
think we
can keep
could
on
talk
doing
about.
that.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to have you back on at some point, if you're open for
Sounds
it.
good.
So, but thank you, and I'm gonna let you go so you can enjoy your evening with Oliver there.
With my kitties.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the best ways to spend an evening. We all know
I'm
that.
clawing at my feet.
Yeah. But we love them so.
Oh,
So.
we do. I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with them.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And that's a wrap on episode 129 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you are part of my YouTube audience. If you would like to support me in my mission of exploring spirituality, consciousness, psychedelics, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship to a living earth, you can sign up for my Patreon. Perks for patrons include early access to episodes, ad-free episodes, shout-outs to members, a members-only Facebook page, access to the Rebel Spirit Radio Discourse server, and a monthly book club where we explore books discussed on the podcast, spiritual and philosophical classics, and books related to the cocktail apocalypse. You can find the link for my Patreon in the show notes or the video description. And of course, if you would prefer to make a one-time donation, you can still do so via PayPal. I will be tremendously grateful for any support that you can provide. And of course, another way that you can help the podcast is to share it on social media. That really is one of the best ways you can help and support the podcast. Help me grow my audience. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and you know, I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be in peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.